Next up is Inside Finance. Inside Finance is a special feature of this program every week, where we discuss in depth the financial and economic challenges of our time and explore possible solutions. Here is your host this week, Stanford Simon.
Listen, good day to Grenada, Caraco, Pretty Martinique, wherever you are listening across the Caribbean. I am Stanford Simon. Welcome to Inside Finance. It's a joy and a pleasure to be with you once again. And I'm here in Turks and Caicos attending the 47th annual meeting of the Board of Governors. And I will be talking to Mr. Timothy Antoine, who is Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. We'll hear what he's up to, what's been going on in the Central Bank, what progress you have made in the past 12 months, just past a year, being Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. We take a word from our sponsors. We come back and continue our discussion here with Mr. Timothy Antoine, Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank.
Come with your dream to the Grenada Development Bank, and we will find a way to finance it. Whether you want to start a business or refinance an existing project, whether you want a mortgage for house or land, or a loan for a vehicle, or your educational advancement, we have a special to finance your energy conservation overhaul for your home or office. They all come with the lowest interest rates. At the GDB, the People of Grenada Bank, we encourage ideas and we finance dreams. Come into us because the future is yours. The Grenada Development Bank. Empower, transform.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Stanford Simon coming to you out of the beautiful place of Turks and Caicos. Good day to you, Governor.
Good day to you, Pastor Simon, and good day to all of our listeners, home and abroad.
All right. Well, it's good to have you. We're here in Turks and Caicos. We meet in some interesting place. Last time we met was in Jamaica.
That's right. It seems that this is an annual event now. But I'm happy to connect with you as always.
Yes. It is. Now, what have you been up to these days? The CDB Board of Governors meeting here. What are the key takeaway we hear in Turks and Caicos?
Well, first of all, I have had a long association with the Caribbean Development Bank, both as a director and alternate governor, but also as somebody who's worked in the Ministry of Finance for a long time and worked with CDB on many projects over a long period of time. So the relationships with CDB are strong. As the premier development finance institution in our region, I find it very useful to stay engaged with CDB. And that's why I make an effort to attend the annual meetings. Now, over the last few days, what we've done is spend a lot of time listening to the performance of the bank, but also what is the prognosis, what are the prospects. So we heard from the president yesterday, for example. And his key message was, when other countries turn inward, we must turn outward. Essentially, he was saying that with the waves of nationalism that you were seeing in certain parts of the U.S. and Europe, and as people sort of look inward, it's very important for the survival of the Caribbean that we look outward, first of all, within our region, so that he's promoting regional integration for economic production, productivity, and prosperity, but also to begin to look beyond the region. To the rest of the world in terms of being able to export, earn foreign exchange, raise the standard of living in the Caribbean. Because we're small states and we're in a small region, we cannot take an inward-looking approach to our development. It has always been, going back to Arthur Lewis, in the theory of unlimited supplies of labor, which he wrote in 1954, and it's always been for us to grow and to expand, we have to be outward-looking. And if you look at economies such as Singapore and Mauritius and even South Korea, which are viewed as really major successes in the last 30, 40 years, they have all had an outward-looking approach. So that was a key message coming from the president, that notwithstanding the challenges in the region, we need to come together. He was making a point, for example, when you look at many of the financial companies in the region. They started within the country, then they expanded these financial conglomerates. They now have businesses across the region, whether that be banks, insurance companies, people involved in retail, of various kinds. But they've expanded regionally, and some of them have even gone beyond that. They've gone into Latin America, some have even gone into Africa. So the globe is really our marketplace as a small region. And for us to grow, we have to be outward looking. So that was a key message coming from the president, which I thought was very important given the times in which we live. Beyond that, the Board of Governors have been looking at key issues like growth. So for example, I sat on a panel with several other colleagues to look at the issue of productivity and growth in the Caribbean. Because the key challenge for us in these times is how do we raise the trajectory of growth? And of course, related to that is employment. So we speak of inclusive growth, meaning growth with employment creation. How do we raise that level? In the Eastern Caribbean, for example, ECCU, we are doing about 2.5% growth per annum. That's better than many countries in the Caribbean, but the truth is that our target is 5%. So we have work to do. Okay. So there's a constant question that we are grappling with is how do we raise the level of growth in our economies? And so that was one of the issues that was discussed. Another issue was the issue of climate change and how, of course, that impacts our development and how we could mobilize climate financing to support our development, recognize the need for us to do adaptation to be able to basically protect our economies against shocks such as natural disasters or to minimize the risk or to reduce the impact. Because every time you have these impacts, you sort of start over.
Right.
And it's very difficult to sustain development if you constantly in start over mode. And then another area of discussion is tourism. And that's important because as service-based economies, many of our countries are highly reliant on tourism. It is our main earner of foreign exchange. And so we have to constantly look at what is happening in terms of the global market. Are we losing market share or are we gaining market share? And the reality is that as a region, we've been losing market share in tourism. So that's something we want to reverse. So even though arrivals may be up in some of our countries, when you look at our performance relative to the rest of the world, it appears as if we are losing some market share on stayover. Whereas on cruise, we seem to be gaining some market share. So it's a mixed bag. But tourism being what it is for the Caribbean, again, it's an area that we have to give a lot of attention to make sure that we maximize the benefits of tourism. And not just tourism in its narrow sense, but the cluster of services around tourism.
Right.
So whether that is agriculture, whether that is entertainment, whether that in cultural industries, whether that is yachting, all the services around tourism, the cluster is very important. Those are very important for the economy of our region. So those are some of the key takeaways. And of course, like everything else, these meetings are about reconnecting with development partners. So a lot of the time I've spent in meetings talking to not just people at CDB, but really development partners who work in the region, who I engage on an ongoing basis from the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. And of course, many of whom I have known over the many years when I served in Grenada.
Right. Now, you recently completed your first year as governor. How has it been? I know you're going in with all that has happened, the changes of then Mr. Dwight died not too long after that. What was it like for you?
Well, the first year was very good. Thanks for asking. I would say, from every angle that I look at it, it was a very good first year, a very good start. Certainly, in terms of what we set out to do as a bank, we achieved pretty much everything that we set out to do. And for me, that's gratifying. And that's important because at the end of the day, we manage for results. So we want to make sure that we hit the target. So what are some of our key achievements? We kept the dollar stable. Yeah. That's important. That's fundamental to our monetary union and what we do. And I've reported on this, we reported on this on an ongoing basis, but throughout my first year, we pretty much averaged around 97% in terms of the backing of the EC dollar by foreign reserves. I remember that simply means for every one EC dollar in circulation, we had about 97 cents in foreign reserves. The law requires us to be backed at 60%. So that is clearly a major achievement, and it's ongoing. This is not new, but it's important to maintain what you have. And that's not, you don't maintain that by accident. You have to work at it every single day. So we've maintained the stability of the dollar. I think that's first. Secondly, I think we have certainly revamped our engagement with the citizens of the ECCU. What do I mean? One of the things I said in my first interview was I wanted to open up the bank. I wanted to make the central bank more transparent. I wanted people to better understand what it is we do, why we do it, and how we serve the region, because we're public servants at the ECCB. I maintain that. I remind management and staff of that all the time. I am constantly mindful that I am a public servant, and therefore we're accountable. So for us, it was very important to find new ways for us to open up the bank so that people understand what it is that we do in the central bank. How did we do that? In the very first week, we launched our YouTube channel to be able to begin to bring more content to people in an accessible manner, recognizing the changing times. So we entered the world of social media, first week. And then after that, in a couple of months, we launched our podcast, ECCB Connects, which is weekly, and which really gave people a chance to get inside the bank, see the operations of the bank, talk to the people, the men and women inside the bank, who represent the bank every day. And so we had people from all across the bank speaking on various issues. We then hit the road, as it were, and we went into every country. I visited all of the countries, in some cases multiple visits, sharing with them our vision for the region, the performance and prospects. And in those meetings, we engaged the head of state, the cabinet, the leader of the opposition and team. We would talk to bankers association, trade unions, churches, civil society, media. And we found those meetings very, very enlightening, very energizing. And it gave us a chance to not just share, but also to hear, to listen to the people. So those are some of the things we did. And then later on, we also launched our Facebook page. So in terms of country engagement, public outreach, we hit new highs. And then, of course, I've just mentioned one other at this point, and that is returning the bank to profitability. This is something I had said we wanted to do early. And after 3 years of losses, obviously a lot of that had to do with the low interest rate environment, we were able to return the bank to get back into profitability. So very pleased about that, because that's important for how we function as an institution. And as a result of that, we've been able to obviously strengthen our staffing. And so perhaps beyond the three things I mentioned, exchange rate stability, public engagement, and profitability, I would also mention developing people, because we've invested a lot in developing the staff of the bank. And that's ongoing. But it's very important for the mission that we have, for the mandate to be able to serve. We have to keep growing. We have to keep learning as leaders. We have to keep being on the cutting edge in terms of technical excellence across the departments. And we invested heavily and continue to do in our staff with respect to training and development. So those, I would say, are some of the sort of the top of mind, if you will, achievements that I would mention at this stage.
What would you say in the midst of all that has happened, have you seen, is your main takeaway in the past year?
Well, you could discuss that at multiple levels. If you talking about changing culture, I'm reminded of what I've always known. Changing culture takes time. And so when I arrived, we talked about changing culture around the STAR mantra. Service excellence, teamwork, accountability, and results. And then we revised the staff mantra to say service excellence, teamwork, and truth-telling, accountability, and results. The truth-telling was important for us to make sure people have the freedom to speak truth to power, to speak truth to each other, and for us to receive truth in the spirit in which it was given. Grace and truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be grace as well. And but what that is important, because you see, in a diverse institution like the ECCB, you have people from different countries, different cultures. Even though we're from the Eastern Caribbean, we have different ways of doing things and how we view the world, in a sense. Similar but different. Bringing that together, that is a challenge but also a strength, because diversity is our strength.
Right.
So managing diversity, managing, for example, the millennials in the bank are different from how you manage the people who are, you know, I guess they call them Generation Y or whatever. The people who are in the 50s, 40s, yes, and 50s may be different from how you deal with people in their 20s.
Right.
So these are the millennials, 20s, maybe early 30s. So you have to understand the environment. And I think, like everything else, we've had a good success. I think the team has rallied around me and with me. But I also recognize that when you change in culture, when you asking people to take it to another level, to be more outward looking and focused, and that does take time. So patience is always required, and I understand that. Beyond that, it's I would say the normal management challenges of time, you know, managing, balancing work and family, but that is not new. And we try.
Yeah. All right, folks, I'm talking here to Mr. Timothy Antoine, who is Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. We're talking what's happening with him in the first year. I want to talk to him a little bit about Grenada. He has left a year, and a lot has happened since he left. We take a word from our sponsors. We come back and have a discussion with him about the IMF visit and the key successes they see for Grenada in the coming year.
The Grenada Development Bank is pleased to announce it has received approval of a loan of 10 million EC dollars from PetroCarib Grenada Limited to be used to continue and enhance the bank's ongoing home mortgage loan program. On lending terms and condition, 100% financing for public officers once we can get at a minimum 100% security coverage. 100% financing to other persons, non-public servants, on condition that the maximum loan-to-value ratio is 90%. Up to $25,000 for furnishing, maximum loan $450,000 EC dollars. Use of funds, purchase of land and building, bill on land already owned, purchase existing property, renovation and extension of existing property, retrofitting of existing property, energy saving and hurricane safety installation, debt consolidation on condition that GDB is doing some new lending for one of the above. Special promotional period run from April 1st to June 30th, 2017. During this period, we will offer the borrowers interest rate of 5.99%, 50% reduction on negotiating fees, 50% reduction in legal fees, special discount from selected business houses across Grenada, Caraco, and Petite Martinique.
Welcome back. This is Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon, talking with Mr. Timothy Antoine, Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. We're here in Turks and Caicos, the 47th annual meeting of governors happening right here in the Turks and Caicos. Now, Governor, the IMF has just completed Grenada's sixth and final review. How do you feel about that? Because you have been integrally involved in helping us with our structural adjustment, the beginning stage of that, and then you left halfway through. What are your thoughts on what has happened?
Two things. Proud to be a Grenadian, gratified as governor. So yes, I had a contribution with respect to the homegrown program. I'm very proud about what we have achieved as a nation, speaking now, you know, in my former capacity, where we came together. I think for me, it's a feeling of great, great pride in our nation. because I really believe what we've achieved is really not just unprecedented in terms of the actual success of the program, but how we achieved it, how we came together as a nation. So very proud. I commend the government and people of Grenada on the completion of the sixth and final review. It's amazing how time flies, because
yes.
I remember, obviously, I was there for the first three.
Yes.
And when you start out, you plan for the best, you hope for the best, but you never know for sure how things will go. Obviously, as a man of faith, you know, one has a certain faith in outcomes. But it's really gratifying to see how the country came through. And of course, since my departure, we continue to work as a team, the Ministry of Finance, with the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, the Cabinet, and the social partners, ultimately. And so the success of the homegrown program is Grenada's success. Everybody has shares in that enterprise of success. Everybody has shares, every Grenadian. And should take comfort, because the truth is every Grenadian makes sacrifices, and therefore every Grenadian should benefit, should share in the benefits of the program. So, in sum, proud and also gratified.
In all of this, what are some of Grenada's key successes? When you look back, you have been there. You've been a public servant for how many years?
Well, before I left Grenada, 22 years.
22 years. So
yes.
You have been there long. You have seen a lot.
Yes.
When you look at this, what would you say was the key successes of Grenada at this point?
Well, obviously, the top one is really the social dialogue. I mean, without question, that is a big success factor. The reality is that the social partners came together, found common cause, and took collective action to pull Grenada out of the fiscal situation we found ourselves in, and to really turn the fiscal and debt situation around. A lot of credit has to go to the government, Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, who chairs the social partners, and all of the partners, the business community, labor unions, churches, civil society. And then, of course, our development partners who worked with us, the IMF, the World Bank, the CDB, the European Union, the British, the UK government, Canada, and so on, and others. But above all, the people of Grenada, because they, you know, made the sacrifices, stood up, and recognized that we had to do something for ourselves. And then once the partners recognized we were willing to take certain decisions, they were ready to help us. So I think the first success is that we came together. And for me, that is one of the finest moments in Grenada's history. The second thing is the economy grew throughout the program. Typically, programs, the country is going to recession. And there are a lot of...
That's the norm.
That's the norm with homegrown programs or fiscal adjustment programs. And there were a lot of people, including well-credentialed persons, economists and others, who felt and thought the economy would not grow. What happened? The economy grew, in fact, on average by over 5% over the 3 years of the homegrown program. That is unprecedented. That is unprecedented. People can check. So that to be doing a program and at the same time to achieve growth is amazing. Obviously, we thought we could grow the economy, but we could not be absolutely certain that it would grow by that magnitude. So I would not sit here and say we knew it was going to grow by 5%. We expected it to grow. We hoped it would grow at a reasonable clip. But in fact, it surpassed expectations. The second thing, so social dialogue, people coming together, the growth, I think you have to look at the fiscal and debt situation. Because remember, the homegrown program was designed particularly to fix the fiscal situation. Going back to the 70 cents of every dollar being spent on wages and pensions, and then nothing, you have debt and nothing to really invest, unpaid claims, all of the. And the debt to GDP ratio was 108%. At the end of 2017, that is going to come down to around 72%. That's a big, significant drop. And the reason why it's going to come right now is it's probably in the 80s. And the reason why it will drop is that the next round of debt restructuring is going to kick in this year. Now that Grenada has successfully completed the sixth and final review. I don't know if people understand that, but all of these things, the incentives.
Explain that.
Well, the way the debt restructuring worked is that we got half of it up front, in 2015, and then the other half would come at the end of the program if we completed the program successfully. So this has nothing to do with monies coming from CDB and World Bank and IMF and so on, European Union. That is also coming because of our success. But the debt restructuring, which is a part of the program, was intended to happen if we stuck to the program and did what we said we were going to do.
Okay.
Because remember, the people made sacrifices, but creditors also made sacrifices. And the creditor's position was, if you make the sacrifices and do the things that you say you're going to do, we are going to do our part to help in the solution. And they've done that. So the second round of the debt restructuring kicks in 2017, and that will bring down the debt further. And that's something perhaps many people don't recognize. So certainly when you look at the turnaround in the revenues, the fact that the Inland Revenue and Customs are consistently meeting and exceeding their targets. I mean,
I interviewed them 2 weeks ago, and I was shocked to know they're surpassing their targets every month.
As somebody who been in the ministry a long time and went through the challenges of not being able to find money to do things and all the frustrations and pains of that, and I went through that. I felt that personally, day in, day out. It is so refreshing to be in a situation where you're meeting those targets, and at least you can pay bills, certain bills on time. You can meet obligations. I'm sure there's still a lot of needs out there, but at least it's much more manageable.
Right, it's not as painful.
Yeah, and at least you can focus on policy issues, and you can move other areas. It's very difficult, for example, the PS in the Ministry of Finance, if every other call or every 9 out of 10 calls is about money and finding money to do this and do that, when you also supposed to be thinking about strategy and policy and trying to figure out how you think. I mean, it just weighs on you mentally and emotionally. I don't think a lot of people understand that, because we don't complain about these things. We carry it. It's part of the job. You have to take care of yourself, because you know, nobody's going to look out for you in that sense. I mean, but the reality is that it is so stressful in that kind of environment. And people don't recognize that. And a lot more credit has to be given to people in the Ministry of Finance who labor under these things, because the truth is, at the end of the month, when you have to pay the payroll, you're not just thinking about your family of 4 or 5 or 6 people. You're thinking about 6,000-7,000 people who have to eat.
That's a lot.
That's the weight you feel. That's the weight I felt as Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance, when I have to figure out with the Accountant General and the rest of the people, Minister of Finance and others, how are we going to pay when someone's, there was no money, and we had to find a way. People don't understand those things. So for me, looking now and seeing the performance of revenue and seeing the fact that, you know, you can pay salaries on time, you can meet certain obligations, it's easier. It's not easy because there's still more demands than money, but at least it's easier. Yeah. That for Grenada and for the people who work in the Ministry of Finance, and frankly for government in general, must be refreshing. So the fiscal and debt situation, the turnaround in that regard, I think is important. And then the other thing I'll mention is that's very important, fiscal responsibility legislation. The reason why I mention it, Pastor Simon, is that I remember when I was engaging partners and citizens about the homegrown program, and I really, you know, listened to people and heard their concerns. One of the questions they kept asking is, how do we ensure that we don't have to go back and do this again in 5 years or 10 years? And one of the things this program has done, which is different from any other program that we've done, because we've done adjustment programs before, is the fact that we now have in law fiscal responsibility.
So the government is responsible.
The parliament has to give oversight to the government and binds the government. The government cannot go off on a wild goose spending chase and just spending spree and just spend what it doesn't have, because we got into problems because we were spending more than we earned. And the fiscal responsibility legislation forces government and everyone to keep the fiscal house in order. And that for me is a major achievement. It is so big that I promote this idea throughout the currency union, everywhere I go, because I really believe that is part of how we can try to sustain growth in our countries and avoid the volatility, the boom and bust. But as governor of the ECCB, this is important, because in a monetary union where your monetary policy is fixed, meaning we have set the exchange rate and that is set, what you have to focus on to make sure you can maintain the stability of the dollar is fiscal responsibility, fiscal discipline, fiscal management, strong fiscal management. And so that message is something that I communicate everywhere I go in the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union.
Which is important.
Very, very important.
Now that the program is over, what are your expectations for Grenada in the years ahead?
Very, very good question. I expect, fully expect, that now that Grenada has put its fiscal house in order, it shall remain in order. And frankly spoken, it is the Parliament, the social partners, the nation that must ensure that happens. When we go out of order, there's pain. There's a lot of sacrifice required. So my first expectation is that the nation, we got in fiscal shape. It's like you're unfit, you're not healthy, and you had to get healthy, you had to get in shape.
You watch your diet,
you
begin to do things to,
right.
to so get your weight down.
You get your weight down, you get in shape, you had to stay in shape. Mm-hmm. And people say sometimes that they had a spot. After you drop the weight, how do you maintain it? Yeah. It's a lifestyle. You can't be a fad. You do a diet thing, you do a thing, and then you lose the weight. It won't come back on. What are you going to do differently? So for me, I will be looking to see how Grenada manages. We cannot have a situation now that the program is over where the government goes on a spending spree, where we just throw our caution to the wind and say, well, we released. We're out of bondage now, so we're free. That will be the worst thing we can do and will be a discredit to the sacrifices of everybody in this country. And we have to be vigilant about that. So this is my first expectation. I think it also allows the government to focus more on the question of growth, job creation. I'm looking at areas such as agriculture, ICT, energy. Mm-hmm. All right? I really hope and fully expect that the government will give even more attention to these issues now that the fiscal situation has improved. So that is a big challenge going forward because, let's face it, unemployment is still way too high, especially amongst our youth. And that requires special attention looking at ICT, looking at agriculture, looking at energy. And by energy, I also should say the green agenda, all the green jobs, the green, the possibilities in the, and even the blue economy. So that whole focus on growth and how you keep, get up to 5% and maintain that. Because if you maintain a 5% growth over a significant period of, say, a 10-year period, you can see transformation. You can really see a material change in the lives of almost everybody.
Right.
Because, you know, some people are feeling the growth, some people are not feeling the growth. What you want is inclusive, where more and more people are feeling it.
Right.
It's spread. The benefits are spread. And part of that is jobs. Hmm. Part of how you make sure your growth is inclusive is that more people have jobs, have economic opportunities, have income. So that, for me, would be a second expectation. I also would expect to see the government maintain not just fiscal discipline, but transparency. So, for example, every month the government publishes its fiscal accounts, what it earned, what it didn't earn. There's no reason why that shouldn't continue now that the program is over. I mean, this is for the nation. This is not just for the IMF. I think transparency should continue to be the order of the day. So you should continue to publish every month. That discipline, we've been doing it now for the last 3.5 years, continue to do it. I like to see the CBI, same thing with citizenship and investment. Grenada has a model in the region in terms of publishing a template that is used to publish applications, approvals, denials or applications refused, monies collected under the various, like, whether it's National Transformation Fund or it's approved projects. That transparency must continue. And there's no reason why that should stop because the program has ended. So I would say those are some of my expectations. And from where I sit as Governor of the Central Bank, it's not just about Grenada, it's about the currency union. If Grenada is doing well, the currency union will do better. And if Grenada has good models and good practices, Grenada can share those with other countries in the currency union. And Grenada has, in fact, been called upon to share the experiences with the social partnership, with how it has its CBI, transparency around CBI, and fiscal responsibility. Those are three things that other countries are asking Grenada about. And it's important that Grenada maintains that because people are looking to Grenada. Mm. So you can't let down the region.
So it's leadership.
It is always comes down to leadership. Mm. It's always comes down to leadership. And I want to see Grenada continue to blaze the trail in respect of these reforms that it undertook during the homegrown period.
What would you want to say to our people as you conclude, as we conclude this time together?
Well, I just want to say it's always great to reconnect. I like the fact that the program continues, yes, and that you know you continue to keep the nation informed, and because that's a duty as public servants to find novel ways to share information and keep people informed. I want to thank the Grenadian people. You know, I continue to get messages of prayers and support all the time. Whether it's people traveling, whether it's emails, whether it's through my family, all the time. I know that people praying for me. And I want to say I love them and I appreciate and really covet their continued prayers. So whether it's the people, the good people at St. George's Baptist, whether it's my own church family at Bible Holiness, St. George's, whether it's the Ministry of Finance, the Grenadian people in general, I just want to thank them for all their love and support.
And our people ask me to ask you when you're coming to preach for them.
We will see. But what I can tell you is that I don't know how the word got out, but I have been doing a fair amount of that in St. Kitts.
That's good.
And I didn't advertise. But, you know, the Lord's work is the Lord's work. And when you have a purpose, it follows you wherever you go. Mm. It really doesn't matter where you happen to be.
So what is church life like there? I mean,
St. Kitts and Nevis has lots of churches. For a small country, it's amazing. It's a federation, so it's St. Kitts and Nevis. There are many churches, some of them quite large, and more growing up. So I often wonder about the numbers where all these people are going to, but maybe we will see. But I have visited a lot of churches in my time there. So I move around, I get invitations to visit churches from staff members, from people in the community, and I get invitations to speak at various churches as well. And to be honest with you, once the schedule permits, meaning I'm not traveling, you know, I'm in country, I try to make myself available because it's God's work. So very lively community there. I obviously there are various denominations. I come from the tradition where I enjoy a very lively worship. So that is so. And of course the expanding of the word and the community outreach and so on. So we fit it in. We have a sort of home church, a base that we operate out of. But we do visit quite a bit as well. So it's been good.
Well, it's good chatting with you, really. I mean, it's just so enjoyable. I feel like I could stay for a long time, but we have a lot to do and meetings to go to. I want to thank you, Governor, Mr. Timothy Antwine, for sharing with us today. One about your work in the central bank itself, how it has been. Just before I leave, this critical question. The central bank and many persons asked me the question, this pegging of the US dollar, could you just explain that? Because a number of people have asked me the question and I could not explain it.
Right. So essentially, the peg means simply put that for every one US dollar, the equivalent is 2.7 EC. So one US dollar is worth 2.7 EC dollars. That peg that was set in 1976. 1976. Prior to that, we were pegged to pounds sterling.
Mm-hmm.
But when we recognized that, in fact, our major trading partner was the United States for tourism and trade, and a lot of our transactions were going to be in US dollars, it made more sense to peg to US rather than pounds sterling. So we shifted in 1976 to pounds sterling. So the peg is simply the level at which we set the EC dollar to the US dollar.
Okay. And then
now, having done that, you could say whatever you want about the peg. You have to defend the peg. That is only possible with foreign exchange, with the backing. So the peg is one thing. Setting the peg is one thing.
But maintaining
the peg, as we've done for the last 41 years, requires us to have the foreign reserves to back. So if you contrast that to some countries that have slipped and slipped and slipped and slipped. The reason is that they were not able to maintain the foreign reserves to back the value.
Oh.
So that moved from, it got lower and lower and lower and lower. We've been able to maintain it at that high level.
By having the foreign reserve.
By having the foreign reserve. That is what makes our EC dollar strong, the backing of the reserve. So the peg is simply what was set.
Mm-hmm. 1976.
But thereafter, what protects the peg is the foreign reserves. And part of how you maintain your foreign reserves is that you avoid what is called printing money, which is excessive lending to our governments. Because if you do that, you then draw down on your foreign reserves. Because remember what happens when you lend that money, where does it end up? It ends up in imports, which means that it's a drain on your foreign exchange. So if you have a rapid expansion of the money supply through lending to government, excessive lending to governments, or put it the other way around, excessive borrowing by governments from the central bank, you undermine the currency because the foreign reserves come down sharply. We've been able to maintain a situation where we are very prudent in terms of our lending to governments, so we cannot be accused as a central bank of printing money because we're very, very disciplined when it comes to the amount of loans we make to our governments, extremely disciplined. And that is a major reason why we've been able to maintain the peg. And, of course, the reality is that for us to change that peg, every member, all eight, have to agree.
All eight members?
All eight. So if we have to change the peg from 2.7 to something else, all eight must agree. That's a principle of unanimity enshrined in our agreement. So you can't just get up and change it. I can't change it as governor. No one country can change it. All eight. And secondly, the same Monetary Council, all eight, have decided that we must have at least 60% backing at all times by law. Now, I said it's been 97% for the last year, but the law, it says 60. For that to change, for it to be higher or lower, all eight must also agree.
That's a high level of discipline.
Correct. So that is our strength, because we all will have to agree to make a change. One person can feel like...
So the seven countries have to
all
agree.
All eight must agree. That is different from many countries where you have a single country central bank,
right,
where it's just one government who has a direct...
Directing.
Yeah.
The seven countries are...
The eight, sorry. Anguilla, Antigua and Barbuda, Dominica, Grenada, Montserrat, St. Lucia, St. Kitts, St. Nevis, St. Vincent and the Grenadines. I think we have eight there.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. The two, so it's Montserrat and Anguilla, the two British overseas territories, and then the six independents.
I didn't realize that Anguilla is part.
Anguilla joined after, but Anguilla is part of.
Is part of that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Timothy Antoine, Governor of Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. Thank you so much for coming on Inside Finance, a program you helped create and is still going.
That's sustainability. And you must take a lot of credit as well. It's always been great partnering with you, Pastor Simon. So I want to thank you, not just for a partnership on the program, but for what you continue to do in terms of bringing information to people, sharing in various ways. That is so, so important. And so I want to thank you as well for your service and your contribution to the homegrown program. Thank you, sir. God bless you.
God bless you. Folks, you've been listening to the governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, Mr. Timothy Antoine. I've been talking with him for the pretty much last 40 minutes. And it has been a really good discussion. You see, a year has passed since he's been. He didn't feel like that long, but a year has passed. He's doing very well. The EC dollar is still strong. And Grenada, he's very, very proud of what we have done as a country. Congratulated the government, the people of Grenada, for the work that they have done. Thank you, sir. May God bless you and keep you. And all folks, wherever you are, throw the length and breadth of Grenada and the world at large. Thank you for listening to Inside Finance. You can go to the website sgbcgrenada.com. The program will be uploaded there, and also on the Ministry of Finance website, the program will be there too. I am Pastor Stanford Simon. Thank you for being with me again, and coming out of the 47th annual meeting of the the Board of Governors that is happening in Turks and Caicos. I'm Stanford Simon. Wish you a very blessed and enjoyable day. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to another edition of Inside Finance, a program that explores the financial and economic challenges of our time. Join us next week for another edition.